Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. So are you ready to get inspired? Because that's the name of today's book. We are going to talk about understanding creativity. How does creativity work? Where does inspiration come from? How can we optimize our own creative potential? And what do great creators have to share with us? Well, I have the perfect person to talk with us today, award-winning journalist Matt Richtel. First of all, he's extremely creative himself. And secondly, his new book shares really exciting new research from around the world on creativity and the creative mind. Matt's an excellent narrative storyteller, as you might expect from a journalist, and he blends his discoveries from science with insight from some of the world's greatest creators and some of his own stories too. We talk about the muse, we talk about hope, why intelligence doesn't matter that much in the creative process, how anyone can become more creative, and much more. So Matt Richtel is an American writer and a New York Times science reporter. He was awarded the 2010 Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting for a series on distracted driving. In fact, Matt and I talked about that book when it came out. So if you jump on our website at conversationslive.net, type in Matt Richtel, that podcast will pop up. It was an excellent book. Just Like This is an excellent book. He's the author, actually, of many books, fiction, nonfiction, even a daily comic strip. And the new book we're talking about today, Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. And here's my guest, Matt Richtel. Matt Richtel, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I am great. I'm really doing good, all things considered, right? And I don't expect you to remember this, but it's been 7 years since we last talked. We talked about your first book when that came out.
Wow, I'm getting old.
Both, right?
Both. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you've handled it better than I have. How are your knees?
Well, I'm trying to be creative about that, okay?
Yeah. I'm space continuum.
Yes, really. So we're talking today about your new book called Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. This is your third nonfiction, is that correct?
This is my third nonfiction, right.
Yeah, okay. And I love this book. I'm fascinated by creativity, first of all. And I love this book because, as the subtitle says, it's a journey through art, science, and the soul. So it really looks at creativity and inspiration from all angles there. You say the book isn't philosophy or esoteric science. It's about the inspiration stirring in each of us. It's also about hope. So all creativity begins with a spark somewhere. What sparked your interest in researching this subject and writing about it?
Well, so years ago, I'll illustrate it through a story how I got interested. I did this syndicated comic strip, and my editor had been the editor of Charles Schulz at Peanuts. And I asked her to tell me a story about Charles Schulz. She said, well, when Schulz would wake up in the morning, he'd go, oh my gosh, I've got an idea. This is it. This is the idea. For the perfect comic strip. And he'd go about doing his comic strip, and he'd wake up the next morning and look at what he'd done and go, you know, I don't know, it's close. Not quite there. Wait a minute. I've got it. I've got the idea for the perfect comic strip. Over the years, I have experienced that sensation. I've talked to others about the sensation of inspiration. But the other thing that got me interested is that creators and creative people, and I ultimately learned many of us, if not all of us, not only feel that inspiration, but can rebound from our recognition that it wasn't as perfect as we imagined and start all over. Inspiration, what is it? I went to find out.
Right, right. And people define inspiration and define creativity in so many different ways, including some of the most creative people on the planet that appeared in your book. It's defined by some as a product, a process, an identity, a personality type. Some say it's newness, originality, novelty. Others say it doesn't really mean anything unless it means something. So for the purposes of our conversation today and your book, how do you now define creativity?
Well, I've settled on two definitions. The second one I'll give to Einstein. first one is very simply something novel that has an impact, but I want to define impact. I'm not talking about changing the world, solving climate change, coming up with a vaccine. Impact can be, I walked into the kitchen, there were three seasonings and one piece of chicken, I had to feed the kids, I couldn't find a recipe, I made something up. It was new and it had an impact. It runs the gamut. And all those great things that we talk about, the great creations that stand the test of time, were all built on something much smaller. So that's one definition, novel with impact, however minuscule, however large. The other is Einstein's intelligence having fun.
Yeah, I love that quote. I think that's a great quote. One thing that comes across in your book, you talk about creators, as unique as they are, seem to have some commonalities. And psychologists, you say, are constantly refining personality models, you know, to try and narrow this down. But let's look at some of those things that creators typically have in common, like innate curiosity, openness, they listen more than they preach, give themselves permissions to ask smart, dumb questions. Tell us more.
Yeah, and I think openness is the core word under which a lot of subsets follow. And, you know, people are going to be tempted to say, well, that sounds loosey-goosey, or, you know, like some sort of progressive mumbo-jumbo, I'm open, I'm not open. But let me actually make it much more concrete than that. I think it's fair to agree, but I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's fair to say that one's ability to be creative depends in part on how much information they can draw on. Is that a fair...
I would say that's fair, yeah.
If I go back to the metaphor of the ingredients in your kitchen, if you have three, you can only make so many things. If you have 20, you can make a lot more. So openness, if you want to be really mercenary about it, it's not the act of, you know, being politically progressive or this or that or whatever. It's an act of allowing yourself to consider more possibilities. And there is a bunch of research in the book that will show that more rigid worldviews will wind up being less creative. But here's my favorite piece of science that will put this in the most concrete terms. Creative people actually physically see more of the world. There's a terrific study that hooks people up to sophisticated eye tracking software and watches their vision. And the people who rank higher on creativity tests look at more information and spend more time examining it. Think of how powerful that is. More information in, more contemplated, more stitched together as creativity.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like Ray Bradbury's, I can't remember the exact quote, but he says we must feast on life. And it's that type of concept. It's just being open to absorb all that information.
And so you start to see why it's tempting to buy into this idea of the very, isolated creative genius, which for my money is a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo. My own theory is a bunch of Hollywood writers wanted to be that person and so created them. These people in their image didn't want to leave the house. But the reality is also that intellect itself is not the measure of creativity. It's much more not only openness, but willingness to try. There's another Einstein anecdote that just really makes me chuckle. He said, and you probably know this already because you've seen the book, but he says to a colleague, I've come up with the unified field theory, this elusive thing he'd been seeking, and his colleague says, well, that's great, Albert, but under that theory, the universe can't exist. And another characteristic you see in creators is quantity over quality, a willingness to try and try again, undaunted.
Yeah. In fact, you say in the book that intellect, because we do tend to think, oh, creative genius, the emphasis on the genius, intellect doesn't really play a large part in it.
Insofar as these, well, first of all, these studies look at IQ, and I meant to say is, insofar as IQ is a measure of intellect, and I don't believe that it is the chief measure, but it's a measure we've used. If you look at IQ measures, which is how these studies are done, anything between, say, 100 and 120, or an average intellect, is enough to be a great creator. There's some research that would suggest IQs over a certain number, like some astronomical number, 145, 147, actually see limitations in creativity. If I had to venture a guess as to why that is, it's because it's possible maybe at some level of intellect, you can actually find the rigid answer to the rigid question without having to think more broadly.
Mm, interesting.
But maybe that's just me rationalizing not having a very high IQ.
I'm sure your IQ is quite high.
It can underwhelm you in so many ways.
You've interviewed so many people for this book, from rock musicians to scientists. And I love the story of Yo-Yo Ma, which you say you went to interview him, you wanted to talk about him, but it turned into a masterclass of creativity. And you said that listening to him, you could hear the essence of creation. You could see it in his face. So talk to us about that a little.
Well, first of all, when he plays, I don't know where this term came from in me, but it just was, he put it there. He seeded it, not through language. But when you watch him play, it looks like a topographical map of his soul. Mm-hmm. Like his eyes moving, his chin quavering. It's like, you know, he's like disinterring his emotions in front of you. And that to me is just so incredibly powerful. And it speaks to another facet of creators, which is their ability to be authentic. The phrase is necessity is the mother of invention. I say authenticity is the grandparent of invention. And what comes first is a willingness to tap into you. Your creativity is your fingerprint. And the other thing that Yo-Yo Ma displayed is such incredible curiosity. I'm like, no, hey, I'm supposed to be asking the questions, Yo-Yo. He's like, well, what about this? You know, who else showed that was Steve Kerr, the coach of the Golden State Warriors, you know, just so
right.
curious. And these guys in their own fields have just done wonders.
Yes, yeah. When I read the story of Yo-Yo, I used to be married to a musician, and not when he was playing rock music, but when he was just the two of us alone and he was playing his acoustic or classical, I used to love to watch his face because these expressions would just come out, you know, a very authentic experience there. So I get that totally. Let's look at why we don't.
I'm resisting my own curiosity to find out what happened in that relationship.
Well, we're divorced now.
That's what I was saying. It sounded for a moment there, I could see you staring at him with affection, and then obviously something didn't work out.
Oh, life happens, you know.
Right,
life happens. I could get creative and make a story of it. Just say life happens. Okay. So for some people, and I've heard this a lot, I used to love the Actors Studio with James Lipton.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I would watch that every Sunday when I was making a career change, because I was going into a more creative field. And I just, even though I wasn't interested in acting, I learned so much from people. And one of the things I learned was that everybody, every creative at some level has terrible fears that they're useless and they're going to fail at what they do. And I also remember watching Nicole Kidman when she played Virginia Woolf in The Hours, and she said she woke up the next... She was terribly excited to get this film role, woke up the next morning, called her agent and started screaming, "You have to get me out of this role. I can't do it." So let's talk about that fear experience and how it stops us tapping into our creativity. What does the science show?
First of all, there is great science here. The science will say that we explicitly say we love creativity, but if you give people who say that an implicit bias test, you know, the subconscious bias test that sort of tell us how we might feel about someone of another ethnicity despite what we say explicitly, in our subconsciously people associate creativity with toxins and poison and even vomit. Now, why would that be? Well, there's actually a number of reasons. I want to use the Nicole Kidman example first. The thing that is essential to recognize about this for me, because I completely appreciate your question. I can hold two truths as someone who tries a lot of things, two truths at the same time. One is I am overcome with belief the way that Charles Schulz was overcome when I take on these projects. And there are times when I am in the middle of these where I am sure I have no idea what I'm doing. Why would both of those truths be true? The fact is that you are creating something that didn't exist before. So there is no simple roadmap. It doesn't exist. You can't point to the plots on the, you know, on the map and say, I made it here, now I'm going here, now I'm going here. There is a leap of faith involved. I don't think that is necessarily means that it's not worth doing or that creators aren't necessarily unhappy. I think that trope is overdone too. But I do think it is part of taking risk. There's another thing that might explain why creators and we feel either as creators or about creators this way, which is that creativity involves changing the status quo. It changes how you work. It changes how you live. In fact, it may displace entire parts of the economy. It is disruptive. So I think what's missing from the trope about the scared or unhappy or fearful creator is that that is the other side of a coin that is immense amount of faith and zeal and passion.
Mm. Yeah, it makes sense to me. That really makes sense to me. You say in your humble opinion that creativity isn't at its core about outcome and influence. It's not about the end game. And, you know, certainly in a commercial field that I work in as a comm strategist and writer, it's all about the end game. But so you don't get too much to enjoy the process because of, you know, quick turnarounds, et cetera, et cetera. You say first creativity comes from personal inspiration. And one of the things that I saw, and you do talk about this in the book too, but I also saw it on your website, was when you met your muse for the first time. I wonder if you'd talk about that to us and how that works for you.
Well, you've asked actually a number of great questions, and the one thing that I want to, I guess, I'm keeping track of them. You were talking initially
about creativity isn't at its core about outcome.
Oh, I know.
Or influence.
Yes. Look, so it's hard to manage work for in a rigid climate. And by rigid, I don't necessarily mean there's a set of rules with many companies and many jobs. I at the end of this book, I explain why it's really not a great idea to quit your day job unless you really hit it big creatively, because creativity often needs to be a companion to the life that in which you must make a living by a rigid rule system. It so happens that I happen to have fallen into a very lucky space, and so in this respect, it's not entirely fair to compare me because my life, my job is mostly creative. That said, I'm writing books and songs that are not for the New York Times, which is my day job. And when I write for the New York Times, I try to be as creative as I can within the rule system of the New York Times, but even there, I'm constrained. Now, that's actually a decent segue if you want me to talk about a little bit of my birth as a creative person, because it was wrenching. Where you were going with this?
Yeah, I loved how you talk about your muse. I'll just read this little paragraph here. You say, my muse, she is aggressive. She inspires me to write articles, mysteries, nonfiction, narratives, songs, children's stories, and for a decade, a daily comic strip. When I hear her clearly, I hear me, and I no longer resist.
I resisted for many years. I grew up kind of a jock, or thought I was a jock or something, and I was the son of a judge, and thought that, you know, people went to law school, that's what they were supposed to do, and so I sort of stuffed down a lot of, I don't know, feelings, emotions, impulses, inspirations, and it took a pretty wrenching downfall in my 20s, which I could aggrandize, but really is just called going through your 20s. And when I came out the other side of that, I lost my filter. And in losing my filter, I'm gonna define that a little different. I became very humbled. I probably don't sound very humbled, but I promise you, I can judge no person, because I saw myself weeping on the bathroom floor and said, I'm better than nobody. But interestingly, when you start to feel better than no other person, if you get lucky, you also don't feel that anyone is any better than you are. And so there's this phrase, I'm not an addict, but I have friends who are, and I happen to interview some and tell their stories in this book. There's a phrase that someone used that I heard someone use in AA, and I thought it was a perfect way of describing how my emergence and how what I see in other people who feel authentic about their craft. This guy said to me, I feel worthy, but no more worthy. I am just as worthy of sharing my things with the world, but I'm no worthier than anyone else. The last point I'll make here, at the risk of being long-winded, is what's implicit in that is sort of, you don't have any business judging me. I'm not judging you, but you can't judge me, and therefore I can put my stuff out there without feeling like you can piss on it.
Right, right.
Excuse my language.
No, that's perfectly okay. No, I totally get that, and I love that story. I'm glad you shared the story of Todd, who said, I am worthy, but I am no more worthy, because I think it's important. It's something a lot of people really struggle with. Doubt is another thing that a lot of people really struggle with. You describe it as creativity's mortal enemy. And we've talked a little bit about some of the negative connotations around that. But how does one's actual own self-doubt, it can cripple us to the point of paralysis?
Yeah, and it shows up in a bunch of forms. One of the most difficult ones is perfectionism. Mm. And it's really, I think perfectionism is in some ways just a form of procrastination.
Yes. I can relate.
Why that made sense. I was hoping it might. Either your laughter either means it made sense or made no sense.
It makes perfect sense, unfortunately.
do you suffer this?
I do. I've struggled with it a lot over the years, but I'm getting better. At least I recognize it now.
To let go of something, imperfect though it may feel.
Hmm. Say that again, sorry.
How have you learned to let go of something and put it into the world, even though it feels imperfect?
Well, when I first started doing live radio, which was about 18 years ago, my producer sometimes would say, good enough, good enough, good enough. And I'd say, no, it's not good enough. It has to be perfect. But then when you've done live radio for a little bit, you realize there's no such thing as perfection, because there are so many factors involved in live broadcasting. And it kind of made me relax and think, you know what? People are still enjoying what I put out, and I think I screwed up. So, I just...
You have said so much. Something of so much value there. And there's a writing analog to it, and it's journalism. At some point, you have to let go. I'm sure it is this way for a musician who goes on tour, and I'm sure it's this way for an app developer who lets go of things in iterations because there are deadlines. In that respect, some people think of deadline pressure as a way of helping them creatively, forcing them to let go. But I actually would think about it a little bit differently. I think it's great training for realizing that nothing terrible will happen.
Right.
If you let go, I actually can't even tell you what perfect is. I don't even know what that word means.
Yeah, I mean, does it even exist? I don't think it does, you know.
Yeah.
One person may think it's perfect and another it's not going to be, so.
It's something out of a romance novel.
Yeah. I want to look at how creativity is good for us. It's can be very good for our health. I've done a lot of shows on creativity and nature and health, and this kind of intersects with that too. You say process of creativity allows us to unburden ourselves, getting in that state of flow, etc. Talk to us a little about the science of that.
More just terrific creative science I was lucky to stumble on. Some research, without going into all the details, essentially shows that people who share of themselves feel unburdened of secrets and even shameful secrets they hold, even if those secrets aren't the things they're sharing. And it's a fascinating thought that that pops into my head a lot, about what it means to give of yourself to the world in some way, and how you can feel less burdened. I'm giving you the facts, but I will tell you that I still don't totally have my head around it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that lots of people carry around uncertainty about themselves, even when they feel worthy, or questions about what's moral and amoral. And amazingly, you could go create an app or start a store and use that energy that may go to worry or something else in a kind of, for want of a better word, in a positive way. And I think it lets people feel less ponderous and unburdened. My sense is that creators, far from being those insular, terrified people that Hollywood would have you believe, have an immense amount of hope inside of them.
Yes, yeah. You were talking with Carlos Santana, and he said the main cancer on this planet is that people don't believe in their own light. Tell us what he meant by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Well, first of all, he may well have been stoned. So, and I want to actually want to dovetail on something I asked him about.
The meditation,
weed, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what he was getting at is that there's a lot of mimicking of others, and an idea that there's some other way you're supposed to be. And I think I get why it's that happens, and I don't think it's anyone's trying to deliberately be inauthentic. I think that there's an idea that your authentic self is too elusive to find in the first place. And so I want to reframe that. I'm going to take a shot at reframing this even in a way that I didn't in the book, although I alluded to it in a story I told about Bruce Springsteen. You can be lots of different people. And it's not inauthentic to feel one way one day and then one way another day. It's why I love writing music in addition to books, because my marriage may be blissful one day, and I'll write that. And another day, I may write something that I will tell my wife is not about her, but is not as glowing.
I know you musicians.
it's not about her. It's about my feelings.
Right.
But the thing I think is interesting is I wouldn't want to suggest to people there's one you. That's its own pit. There's a lot of yous. That's hard for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Dylan wrote, you know, I am multitudes. And I think part of being you is owning those multitudes and being okay with it. And the combination of multitudes that you, whoever you are out there, is unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
The secret ingredient to creativity is you, a cheap line that I put in the book, but I believe that. Now, one more thing about Carlos Santana. I asked him about creativity and being stoned or using drugs. And of all people, he actually told me something that the science bears out. He said it might create a shortcut, but he said meditation's better. It was just harder for me. What the science will show is there's not a big connection between using drugs and tapping this flow state. I just don't believe that that's necessary or the case. Certainly not for everybody.
Right, right. You did a ton of research, as I said earlier, interviewed many, many people for this. Was there something that really shocked or surprised you above all else?
I guess I mentioned earlier seeing that creators see more of the world. That really surprised me because it's so concrete. We talked about that, right?
Yes, yeah.
That one stood out to me, and I think what also stood out was making the connection between creativity at the biological level. I spoke to somebody who looks at creativity through the lens of bacteria, and how they use random mutation to kind of create their way out of situations. They don't do it consciously, but that is an analog to the way random mutation comes up in the brain. And I guess it didn't surprise me ultimately, but it's validating for me to think how much creativity is universal. It validates maybe what I had hoped to discover, and I don't. Maybe I'll be told that there was confirmation bias in that.
Right.
But I really do believe I see it all around me.
Right. Love it. And you can't write a book like this, I don't think, and not have it change you in some way. How has it changed the way you approach creativity or the way you approach your work?
Well, I don't know if it changed me, but I do feel like my risks get bigger and bigger. I was just on a podcast this morning and sang one of my recent songs called Benefits, and the song is the phrase friends with benefits.
Right.
It's supposed to be about sex with friends who you get to have sex with.
Right.
But one day I was struck by one of these multitude moments, and I thought, relationship to me is, I'm lucky about a great marriage. I think what the phrase should be is sex with benefits. If you can find someone to have sex with who you are also friends with, that's the one that's going to last.
Yes.
So I wrote a song called Benefits, and the chorus is sex with benefits, sex without is the pits. And on this podcast this morning, I was like, yeah, I got to finish up with a song. And it happened to be a very, serious, big podcast that I'm not sure my publisher, HarperCollins, would love to have me suddenly singing Sex with Benefits on. And my wife afterwards, I was like, I just sang that. She's like, what are you doing? And I was like, hey, I'm going to keep laying it out there more than I ever have, because that's where my brain went. So...
I love it.
I'm going down with the ship.
You're going down with the ship. Well, it just shows how creative you are. You're a Pulitzer Prize winner, best-selling author, comic strip writer, musician. I mean, you're living it. So good job.
you say that. You don't have to be married to it. You know what the rule in our house is?
I don't know. Do I want to know?
After that story, you're probably wondering if you want to know. But I'll tell you the rule is, no creative projects until the dishes are clean.
Oh, there you go. Your wife knows you well.
I'll send her a song one day, and then I'll get a photo back of the dishes.
I love it. A sense of humor.
Listen, thank you so much for having me. I've probably overstayed my welcome.
It's been such a pleasure talking with you. The book is called Inspired, Understanding Creativity, A Journey Through Art, Science, and the Soul. Listeners, I know, can find out much more about you at mattrichtel.com. MattRichtel.com. A final thought you'd like to leave listeners with, Matt?
I just would urge people to see, not just from this book and about creativity, that there is hope, but more broadly that things may not be as dire as they appear around us, and maybe experiencing some creativity will help people feel less heavy than some seem to feel these days.
Yes, important, very important. And thank you for making science so much fun too. Appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.